Hello and welcome to episode 544 of Contending at the Water Cooler. This is our big one. This is the 2026 Oscar predictions episode with the full team of the Contending. So guys, let's go around. Guys and Meg, she's just Meg. Let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are. Introduce yourselves. Mark, you are on my left, so I will start with you.
I am Mark Johnson.
Joey.
I'm Joey.
Meg.
What was it?
Megan.
Hi, I'm just Meg.
Jalal. I'm Jalal. Ben.
I'm Ben.
David.
David Emmanuel Phillips.
And last but not least, Frank.
Frank J. Happy to be alive.
Yes, absolutely. All right. And again, I'm Clarence Moy. So, like I said at the top, this is our big, one of our favorite podcasts of the year where we get to talk about the Oscars. And we're going to list the our predictions for the winners in all 24 categories. And we are going to start, I'm going to go ahead and kick things off because some of this can run long. We're trying not to go into the epic length here. We're going to start with the live action shorts category. And Joey, since you are the shorts king on the site, why don't you take us through the shorts, please?
All right, sure. So the nominees are Butcher Stain, Friend of Dorothy, Jane Austen's period drama, The Singers, and Two People Exchanging Saliva. I've been on record saying that I actually think all three shorts categories are very, very strong this year. I know a lot of people are predicting Two People Exchanging Saliva for many reasons. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say A Friend of Dorothy. It's the most feel-good one of the three that's a little bit dramatic, a little heart-tuggy. And the director, Lee Knight, has been campaigning his ass off. So I'm going to go on a limb and say Friend of Dorothy, but I feel like Two People Exchanging Saliva is right there.
And everybody else has Two People Exchanging Saliva unless someone has changed their predictions. Does anybody want to say why?
I personally think that they've been really working the circuit, the directors, and they've been all over the place. They're always popping up places. I still need to see all these shorts. I'm mad at myself for not having seen it yet, but that's the one. I just think they're also just really good at promoting it.
Here. The only thing I would offer is that I know it's not Jane Austen's period drama, because that is the worst one here. I did not like that one.
It's not a film. I'm sorry. It's just not a film. I loved it. I thought it was so much fun, it's not a film.
I hated it so much that I hate it.
Now I have to see it.
Butcher Stain is the first time in a long time that a Student Academy Award winner has been nominated here. I did it. It's a really good movie, but I because those don't normally get nominated, I didn't predict it, and I was wrong. I think The Singers is directed by Sam Davis. He's been nominated before. He's a cinematographer. His movie's beautiful. I love that movie so much. And that movie debuted on Netflix. And it did very, very well, very quickly. It hit 5 million views on Netflix very fast. So I don't know, maybe that's a spoiler in there too, but I do think it's between Friend of Dorothy, Exchanging Saliva, and The Singers.
One observation about the shorts categories in general that I think is interesting is that as everyone online has been talking about, this is the first year where they're required to watch everything before they can vote. And if they don't watch it in the portal, they have to sign an affidavit saying that they watched it somewhere else. And I don't know if they have to prove it somehow with the ticket, but I think in most categories, it's all hearsay and it's not going to make a difference in most categories. But I think the one or the couple of places it will make a difference, I think, will be the short ones. Because I think people who don't watch them will just skip over them and not vote for something. So I think if there
Yeah.
are places for surprises, this is one of the places.
It's also a little discouraging to me that on some of those anonymous ballots, there were some, you know, we see them every year, there were still numerous people that said that they abstained from voting from the shorts. That annoyed the crap out of me again. But yeah.
I'm okay with that because I think in the end, those people, if they did vote, we wouldn't like they how they vote. So
Sure.
at least they removed themselves.
Okay, Joey, why don't you take us to Doc Short?
Sure. Nominees are All the Empty Rooms, Armed Only with a Camera, The Life and Death of Brent Renaud, Children No More Were and Are Gone, The Devil Is Busy, and Perfectly Strangeness. I think almost everyone, I think except Frank and David, have All the Empty Rooms winning. Netflix does very well in this category traditionally. That movie to me has sort of been a little bit out front since it debuted at Telluride. You know, school shooting victims, families, you know, dealing with their grief. It's a movie about journalism, photojournalism, documentary filmmaking. But it looks like that Frank and David are both predicting Armed Only with a Camera. Another really good movie about a journalist who was killed at the beginning of the Ukraine conflict. So I don't know if you two want to say anything about that, why you're predicting that.
Do you mind if I go first, David? I just saw all of these in the last couple of days, and Jalal said something really interesting that was on my mind too, and that is that I feel like this year in particular they have to prove that they saw them, or we think they're proving that they saw them, and I am just going with the two that really stuck out to me were All the Empty Rooms and Armed with a Camera, and something about Armed with a Camera just kind of pushed me over. I'm going with my gut on this one.
Yeah.
And I
It's
would probably almost I was gonna sorry. I'm just gonna echo Frank and say I'm a sucker for journalism movies, and this hit the sweet spot for me, and I think it really works, but both movies are good.
Yeah, that's on HBO. People want to watch it. I do think the spoiler here is The Devil Is Busy, about the clinic in, I think, Alabama. Where we follow
Georgia.
a oh thank you follows a security guard. One of the two directors is also nominated for documentary feature for The Perfect Neighbor. So it'd be kind of rad if she won too.
Yeah.
Think I've always had All the Empty Rooms in my top spot since we went to Telluride and we went to that exhibit. And we saw the photos on the wall and how moving those were. And it just felt like that just was like, okay, that is an obvious winner to me at that moment, you know,
Yeah.
even before it got nominated.
It got lots of news coverage too, because I remember when we were there, I had people reaching out to me like, are you going to see this doc there? Are you going to see this doc
Yeah.
short? And like nobody talks about doc shorts like on the Today Show, but they're talking about it. So I think that helps it too.
It's a Netflix film, but I didn't realize they premiered it or had a big showing for it at Telluride. Was it a Netflix film all the way back at Telluride, or did they acquire it later?
I think
I
it
feel like
was.
it was because that we saw it. That was at a Netflix party that we were at.
So,
Yeah.
check. I want to
it's a
say it
beautiful
always
film. It's
was.
a lovely.
I think it was
Really?
acquired. I think it was actually acquired before the festival, but I don't know if it was announced
Yeah, maybe that was it.
before. I could be totally wrong. Yeah, I said prior to Netflix acquired distribution rights before the festival season.
All right, very good. Moving on to animated short, Joey.
We have Butterfly, The Girl Who Cried Pearls, Retirement Plan, The Three Sisters, and Forever Green. I'm a little iffy on this one, to be sure. I love all three of these. I'm predicting Retirement Plan. This is a shot from Retirement Plan. I just feel like that has been around. I've been hearing about that short for so long, and it's won a bazillion prizes. But my own logic for predicting animated short is typically they kind of sometimes like to go for an impressive style of animation. And I think to, not that, I mean, I know nothing about animation. Sure, it's very, very hard. On the surface, Retirement Plan feels a little simpler. It's hand drawn. But Butterfly is done with like a camera with paint, telling the story of a swimmer who survived a concentration camp. And then The Girl Who Cried Pearls is sort of a lot of different, it looks like stop motion. There's stop motion elements to it, obviously, but a lot of people on the team here, and then also I've been seeing out and about, are also predicting Butterfly. So I have Butterfly at number two, but I see like Jalal's predicting it, Mark is predicting it, Ben and Clarence, both David, Clarence are all predicting it. So maybe I'm going against my own logic by predicting Retirement Plan. I just think that short, I don't know, I think a lot of people can just relate to that. It feels has a really universal feeling.
Anyone
We
else
have
have any?
shirtless men.
The one interesting thing about this category, and maybe you'll know the most about it, Joey, in terms of the past winners, it was hard for me because at least recently they tend to like stories where the stories are told by the animation as opposed to a voiceover. And so if that is the, and like last year, what was the one last year with the whale?
Oh, in the Shadow of the
And
Sniper.
the, yeah, the one closest would be the Three Sisters. Everything else, which I have quite enjoyed, but seems to be polarizing online. But everything else kind of relies on narration or actors telling the story in an interesting way, which is not a knock. It's just a different way to tell that story. But it makes me wonder if the Three Sisters has potential to be a spoiler.
That's a good point. That's a Butterfly doesn't, I mean, Butterfly uses a lot of visuals to tell the story, kind of like the windshield wiper a couple of years ago won, and that there was like no dialogue. It was just like visiting different moments of connection, and that I love that movie so much. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it like, you know, The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse has a lot of voiceover. So I don't know. I don't know why. Maybe I just think that they would just respond to the style of animation. And that's why I interviewed that director. She's great. So I should probably go with Butterfly, but yeah.
Any other thoughts? All right, Megan,
No.
let's jump over to, thanks, Joey. Let's jump over to documentary feature with Megan.
So we have The Perfect Neighbor, The Alabama Solution, Mr. Nobody Against Putin, Come See Me in the Good Light, and Cutting Through Rocks. And I think most of us have gone with The Perfect Neighbor, right?
All of us.
Almost.
They
Hold on.
might, I might not be. Yeah.
Really?
I'm
Why?
have I'm having a little bit of a like crisis with this category. I think there's two categories that I probably won't make a decision on until I'm like at the last minute kind of deal, which is probably Thursday for me. Documentary, there's two main contenders. And I'm sorry, I don't want to take over. Did you want to say
No,
something
go
first,
ahead.
Megan? Okay. The Perfect Neighbor, I can admit, is the front runner. But the problem with that movie for me is it has showed up well, but it hasn't really won much, right? And the biggest competitor I think it has is Mr. Nobody Against Putin, which I just learned how to say yesterday. Don't make fun of me. I'm from Ohio. I thought it was Putin. So
Oh,
this,
pew
yeah,
pew.
I'm an idiot. I don't watch the news. This category historically seems to favor more current events type films. So if you look at the last couple of years, you had Navalny, you had 20 Days in Mariupol, and then last year, No Other Land. And the first two have, they're directly tied to the Russia-Ukraine war, which, you know, we know Hollywood and the Academy seems to have a strong interest in what's going on over there and whatnot. So I'm really struggling with not picking Mr. Nobody against Putin just because it fits what they typically go for here, while the perfect neighbor kind of goes against a lot of what they typically do here. It's, archive footage and, I know it was wildly popular on Netflix, but this is, again, this is maybe the toughest category for me.
See, I think that like the comparison with the other ones was that like there was, I mean, not saying that there's not no buzz around Mr. Nobody, but like everybody was talking about No Other Land. That was something that, I think there was a consensus of like, wow, this like, there was that whole like, or is anybody going to see it? I felt like the same way with Navalny. Like, I feel that buzz for The Perfect Neighbor that existed for Navalny and 20 years at Mariupol, or 20 years, 20 days of Mariupol, and yeah, that's how I feel, I guess.
I agree, except that Putin, see, I just did it again. Putin just won BAFTA, right? So when it won BAFTA, I kind of paused, like, oh no, maybe it's not the perfect neighbor. So that's
Doesn't
the biggest.
BAFTA, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was again, how often does BAFTA align with this category, though? Isn't
Didn't
that kind of iffy?
stats.
I was to say, didn't Porcelain
I
Water win at
gotcha.
BAFTA last
No,
year? And then they went on
Superman. Yeah, and guess what I predicted last year? Of course. So,
I did too.
Superman
What
actually
one
won
was?
BAFTA. So, before Superman, the BAFTA winner lined up the last 4 years in a row. So it has recently it has the strongest track record if you look at the last like 5 years. The other thing about Perfect Neighbor is, it kept losing to films. It was nominated at PGA, lost to a film that wasn't nominated. It was nominated for ACE, lost to a film that wasn't nominated. Went up. The only time they've really gone up and one of them won was BAFTA, which Putin won that, and then Perfect Neighbor won Critics' Choice, and we know historically that's almost like a bad omen for Oscar. So again, I fully acknowledge that The Perfect Neighbor is the front runner and most likely to win, but I feel like this is my fourth podcast in the last 3 days, and I'm starting to feel like my predictions are lining way too much up with everybody else, and I think that I have to deviate somewhere. So I think this is probably where I'll deviate.
You know, you make a good argument.
For me, when we get into this prediction business, and I'm just, maybe I was just going to say it, I guess. I think it's at best the fourth best movie in this group, and I don't think it's a
Does
bad movie.
that matter?
No, I think that's the problem.
You're
But
right.
yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter. I think, it was a sensation. It's extraordinarily well edited. I mean, the technical aspects are extremely good. But, at least the next three in line here, Alabama Solution, Mr. Nobody,
Oh,
and
yeah.
God Help Me, Come See Me in the Good Light was most
Right.
devastating things I sat through all year. And I mean that in a good way. I think we're all going with chalk here because I think it's what we've been told to do. A lot, and maybe that's right, but I would, gosh, I'm really rooting for something else, honestly. And that doesn't, and that's not a ditch on The Perfect Neighbor. I do think it's a good movie, but I also think it feels like a kind of a true crime film that's really, really well made.
Well, then which one in terms of like this is another category where I don't think people are going to vote in it. I don't think people are going to lie and say they voted just to vote for one. So I think it's going to be a smaller pool with passionate people who have seen all five. Which one is that? Is that comes See Me in the Good Light? Is that the one that invokes the most passion?
I think
I
it
that's the
invokes a
one I
lot of
hear.
passion.
It didn't
Yeah.
mean,
Yeah,
yeah.
it didn't mean.
Well, the one thing
That's the one I hear a lot about.
I would say I've been thinking about Mr. Putin too, or Mr. Nobody against Putin as well, partially because of the BAFTA, but also a friend of mine who definitely watches a lot of docs. His big thing with that one is that was the easier one to watch about the Ukraine war because you've got this likable protagonist in it too. And I wonder if that also, they don't always go for easy, but that can make it, oh, I have a slightly more fond feeling for that character in the documentary. And so I could see that pushing it too.
Well, to Ben's point, though, too, I mean, if you're looking at the Perfect Neighbor is so immediate and, you know, almost in your face in the way that it's made. And I think that's appropriate for the film. But Mr. Nobody, you know, you really don't even see any excessive Ukrainian carnage or anything. It's really this small story. And I kind of loved it for that. But I think I see your point. But those two films to me could not be more opposed in terms of how they approach their subjects.
Got one more thing too. Oh, go ahead. Let's talk to
me. So, Come See Me in the Good Light seems... I had watched part of it before, and I had been familiar with it, and I just couldn't watch it because it was like destroying me. Like, I was like crying every 10 minutes. And I just watched it again. I started again and watched it in its entirety yesterday. That movie feels so different than stuff that is typically here. It feels like if even just going down to like how it's shot in terms of like this woman and her wife are always, they're like basically like alone in this, you know, beautiful American countryside dealing with how cancer can, you know, tear through somebody's life. I wonder, because I was a little surprised when that got nominated. I wasn't sure if that is, it got nominated because it was also in contention for Song, and they were doing all these events with Brandi Carlile, and maybe more people saw it, and that's why they voted for it. So I'm curious if maybe Come See Me in the Good Light has a little like groundswell of passion. It just feels more personal than it feels more I would say secluded, but you know, it just feels different than everything else.
Yeah, the one other point I'd make too is, we know the Academy has grown much more international year after year. And maybe that's part of why these documentaries are going a little more like, you know, current events type style. So if you think about My Perfect Neighbor, that feels like a very American film that I wonder how international members would even think or connect with it. Whereas Putin, I think, kind of strikes across. Which is probably why it won BAFTA, right?
In that same argument, though, it did become more international. It's 20% international. But in that same push to become international, that wasn't the only push they did. We tend to focus on that, but there was also a diversity push. And there was also the biggest push that we never talk about was women. So, but we're not really talking about like who are women voting for. I mean, it could help Come See Me in the Good Light. The diversity push could help Alabama's Solution or The Perfect Neighbor. So I don't know if that really...
You're 100% right.
Complicated diversity or complicated, what's the word? Demographic shift within the voting body.
It's hard. You're 100% right. It's hard to know. I will say the time where they added more women and people of color was in the late teens. It's in these last few years, like 21, 22, 23, that the international percentage has like been magnified. So that's as somebody who utilizes stats for everything when it comes to this stuff, I've kind of had to shift gears with what range I'm looking at, because the Academy has changed so much over the last like 10 years that it's really hard to use data even 5-6 years ago anymore, because it's so different. So I don't know. This is why, and what I'm selling with Putin is I'm trying to sell myself on it, right? So I still think My Perfect Neighbor is probably going to win, but I want to pick something different somewhere. And this is the one area where I do think it could go. It really feels like 50-50 to me. So I don't know. I'll decide last minute on that one.
And we'll get your last minute prediction on the website. So
that's right.
Very good. Great conversation. Let's jump to international feature. And Frank, why don't you take us through those?
It's such an interesting year for international feature. I think this is Sentimental Values one to lose for sure. Not just because of the 9 nominations, but because of how hard everybody's been promoting it. I think it was just an accident. It came out as a front runner, but then, and forgive me for those who love this film, I think then people saw it and realized that the politics behind it and how it was filmed was far more interesting than the actual film.
Oh, I thought it was interesting. Sorry.
No, no, that's okay. You know, a lot of people feel that way. I felt that there were no high stakes, really, and I had heard so much about it. So I kind of think that's, I think the spoiler here is the voice of Hind Rajab, actually. I think it really does have a chance. I don't think Secret Agent is necessarily the spoiler. And Surratt has somehow fallen, unfortunately, by the wayside, because it's a brilliant film. But it's more than likely going to be Sentimental Value. And I hope Sentimental Value picks up a few more trophies too, even though I know it's unlikely. But I'm curious as to what you guys think.
I think it's Sentimental Value.
Same.
I think it's Sentimental Value, and I would love if the voice of Hind Rajab was in second place, but I still want Sentimental Value to win. And you're not alone with it was just an accident. I couldn't figure out the tone of that movie. It just kept jumping up and down.
All five of these films had tones that went everywhere. The Secret Agent was
Secret
a
Agent.
Was a family drama, and a shark or a leg jumped out of nowhere.
Yeah, the leg.
But, yeah.
I mean, I love It Was Just an Accident, and I would vote for It Was Just an Accident. I'm predicting Sentimental Value, but I don't think it's as clear-cut as any of us are making, and I think these are all five really powerful, passionate films where I think a handful of votes could sway it anyway. But you talk about the politics were more interesting or were more impactful for It Was Just an Accident than the filmmaking as a deterrent, but let's not forget what happened right as voting was happening, which was a war in Iran.
Yeah.
So maybe the politics are the most powerful thing. We don't know. Like, it could be a number of ways. So I wouldn't count anything out.
I think if Frank is right about Hind Rajab, you'll hear my shout all the way from south of the border. That's my favorite film in this category, and I think it's somewhat unfairly got positioned as sort of a almost like a gimmick because of the use of the little girl's actual voice, and I thought, you know, I was riveted every second, and it's very much one of those films where if you know a lot about it, you know the outcome, and you still find yourself hoping against reality that it'll turn out differently. So yeah, that would be my choice, but I think it's Sentimental Value too.
And to what Jalal was saying, it's interesting because there are a number of Academy members. Rod Lurie is one on Facebook who has been pushing It Was Just an Accident. And he has a lot of Academy member friends who are also just blatantly saying they're going to vote for it. So you never know.
Yeah. It's the best lineup I've seen in a long, long time, though.
That's a really strong lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to pick against either film that's nominated for Best Picture, I guess, is where I fall on it. Is I'm sure there's passion for all five of these films, but that passion was across the board for two of these movies. And, you know, while The Secret Agent didn't get as many nominations as Sentimental Value, it still got some great ones. Lead actor, the new casting one, right? So there's certainly, based on that alone, I think there's a strong chance that that one can upset. But then you look at the haul for Sentimental Value, and how the hell do you bet against it? Director, editing, 4 acting awards,
yeah.
Screenplay? It's, like, holy moly.
It would be really weird if that movie went home completely empty-handed. Yeah. Not that we haven't seen that before, but it felt like it overperformed on nomination morning, and it would feel weird if it lost.
That's not the way
I personally have it. Anything, and you'll probably know this, Mark, has Sentimental Value won anything within the industry? It was Stellan Skarsgård, we'll get to him, won the Golden Globe.
Yeah.
And it won a bunch of like European awards, or the European awards. But,
well, BAFTA gave it Best International too, and there's intermixing there.
Oh, the BAFTA International, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and it did win the 4 European awards. 6, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And I'll add too, this is weird that we did it this way, but okay. Secret Agent won Critics' Choice, but sentimental value, they made the decision to where, because it was up for best picture, it was ineligible for international feature for whatever reason. So that you almost, that CCA award, you almost have to put an asterisk by. But yeah, BAFTA is probably the biggest precursor we have. And it did go to sentimental, so who knows? But that's that, I think that's a strong front runner in a year of a good lineup.
And just to mention, there's more crossover in the European Film Award voters with AMPAS than there is SAG with AMPAS, which was an interesting stat that I found out. So, and they went hog wild for sentimental value.
All right, I'm going to move us on to visual effects. And I'll just very quickly run through this because we all have the same predicted winner. And I don't know that there's a lot of conversation here, but if anybody wants to add anything, please feel free. We've got Avatar, Fire and Ash. We've got F1. Gosh. We've got Jurassic World Rebirth. We've got The Lost Bus. And we have Sinners. And we are all predicting, as of the last time we updated the spreadsheet, to for Avatar, Fire and Ash. Does anybody have anything to add to that?
One of the easiest calls of the night, probably. It's right up there.
You
it's
know, the only thing boring.
It's just also boring in this category.
Yeah,
I mean, I think if Sinners wins in this category, it might be a harbinger for something very interesting happening.
I agree.
Great point. And I will say, I did read today or yesterday that they are talking about making Avatar 4, which whoever doubted that they were going to make Avatar 4. And of course, you know, every movie that comes out that gets progressively worse, you know, you always hear this hyperbole that, oh, Disney brass have seen read the screenplay, or they've seen footage and they're just amazed. And it's incredible. It's the greatest film ever made. It's like, Donald Trump is making movies, and it's the best movie ever.
You know what it's like? It's like Two and a Half Men, where it was very, very popular. It was on television for a long time, but I don't know anybody who fucking saw it. I mean, I just never, and maybe I just hang out with a cool class of people. I don't know. But I mean, I don't know anybody who sees this. I saw the first Avatar the first 10 minutes I was going, oh, this is pretty cool. And then the writing kicked in and then the stupidity kicked in. And, you know, it's just like watching a shitty video game. I don't really understand. And I've seen pieces of the rest of it and I keep going, yeah, that's what I thought it was. So anyway, it makes me miserable to think that this got nominated for anything.
Well, the worst
losing each year. Oh, sorry.
No. Go ahead.
I was going to say it keeps losing nominations, you know, year after year. By the fourth one, it might just be forgotten.
Yeah. I enjoy the trend.
Forgetting the costume nomination, Ben.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We're going to talk about the single worst nomination of 2026 Academy Awards in a few categories. So I'm going to carry us forward. Does anybody have any particular interest in the sound category? Does anyone take us through sound?
I can. The nominees are F1, Sinners, Surratt, One Battle After Another, Frankenstein, and besides Frank, we're all predicting F1, who's predicting Sinners. Wow. And I will say literally anyone but the front runner would be a better choice, because Cars Go Vroom is not that exciting sound.
But the cars sound different in Italy. They're sassier in Italy than they are.
Yeah.
Yes, they are.
They grab your ass a lot more.
Yeah. Ciao bella.
Ciao bella.
All right. Frank, you're sticking with Sinners?
I'm sticking with Sinners. I think Sinners is going to win a slew of awards, and it's not because of, and we'll talk about this later, I'm sure, but it's not because after the Actor Awards, every journalist immediately changed course and is giving everything to Sinners. But I think, I don't agree with this, we have to give a bone to F1. I think Sinners will win and will deserve it.
Excellent. Very good. Moving on to original song. Does anybody want to carry us through the Diane Warren Award?
Fuck you. Golden from K-Pop Demon Hunters, end of list. I Lied to You from Sinners, Train Dreams from Train Dreams, Dear Me, a movie that I actually watched, from Diane Warren, Relentless, and Sweet Dreams of Joy from Viva Verde. I'm making sure that we're all, yeah, K-pop Demon Hunters. That's it.
That's one of two awards that we'll win this evening.
It's going to be another year. My favorite thing about the song category is that there's a front runner that always wins. And then when the performances in the room happen, there seems to be a little bit of buyer's remorse. And that is going to happen this year with the Sinners performance, because that lineup for the Sinners song is so good. And every time I've seen Golden perform live, I think it loses a couple votes.
Wait till Miles Caton gets up on the stage. You know, when Miles Caton opens his mouth, everybody's going to be like, oh, I should have done something different.
Yeah.
Oh, they have 13 hours before him. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the Golden performance, partially because I talked to them and they're so excited about the this was earlier before they even got the nomination. They were so excited about the idea of being on that stage. And quite frankly, Golden is my favorite song.
Well,
so
I'm sure they're excited. Why wouldn't they be excited? They're all excited. Is that like a reason to hope or something?
These are not people who were thinking about this kind of thing when they were making the movie. This wasn't, you know. It wasn't in that kind of
fair, but I don't think you vote for something because the people are excited about getting nominated. I think
I'm excited to see them because I enjoyed seeing them be excited. And I also do like Golden as a song, so I think they deserve the win.
Can I just say that the fact that they didn't nominate Salt Then Sour Then Sweet, if you've seen Come See Me in the Good Light, is absolutely preposterous. I'm sorry. Joey, you just saw it. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it was just, you know, a pathetic little crying puddle. And then, of course, you know, the song is there. And it's like, I'm a little shocked that, or, you know, I'm shocked that song and documentary aren't nominated together because they deserve it.
Yeah.
But Frank and Joey, if it would have been nominated, we might not have got Sweet Dreams of Joy from Vita Verde.
Dear God.
And then we're
or the
did anybody hear Diane? This? Have you heard this song?
Yeah.
No, oh, you I need to. You all need to.
Oh, really?
To.
Okay.
Yes. It is so, like, I don't know why it's there. I would give it to Diane Warren before Sweet Dreams.
She just, like, sat at attention somewhere. What?
No, she didn't, because he's not a voter.
Oh, my God.
May she never win a competitive Oscar.
Oh, I wonder.
No. Sorry. Mark, why don't you take us through original score?
Okay. Your nominees for original score are Begonia, Frankenstein, Hamnet, One Battle After Another, and Sinners, which we all have winning. It's swept the award season, so seems like a pretty safe bet here.
Three.
Yeah.
Any other conversation?
Now,
all right, I'm gonna take us through production design, one of my favorite categories, and the nominees are Frankenstein, Hamnet, trying to do alphabetical order, Marty Scream, One Battle After Another, and Sinners. And we're a bit more mixed on this one than I anticipated we would be. The majority of us have Frankenstein, but Sinners is a close second.
It's a good call.
Yeah. Megan, where are you going with Sinners?
I was thinking about how important that whole, the last sequence of the film is with that house and everything.
Well, the construction of the bar. Yeah.
Yeah. And isn't the production designer, would it be like a record or something? Is it Hannah?
Hannah Beachler.
Yeah. She's the production designer, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking that, how important Sinners, that whole section was, and that house and or that barn and everything. So that's kind of just my reasoning.
She's from Ohio, Mark.
God bless her then.
she rose up from... I don't know. I mean, I think about, like, as much as I did not particularly care for Frankenstein, I, you know, just the the ship, the castle, or the laboratory, the way that they reorchestrated the illusion, or the imagery of the creation of the Frankenstein creature, you know, that I think was the strongest aspect of it, that and the costumes. But
yeah, it's, what's tough is I have Sinners winning 4 Oscars and I have it runner up in 11 places. So I have to be wrong in 2 or 3 of those probably, because I just can't see it being the runner up that many times. So this is a great spot to pick it. I think this and costume are probably 2, and sound was a great pick too. So like there's a few picks that like I absolutely could see it winning, but I'm not predicting it.
All right, Joey, why don't you take us to costumes?
Sure. Avatar, Fire and Ash. I can't believe that. Frankenstein, Hamnet, Marty Supreme, and Sinners. Now, I believe all of us have... Yeah, I mean, Frankenstein has basically swept the season. I think the spoiler is Sinners, like Mark was saying. It's period, but it's also Ruth Carter. Ruth Carter, I think, is, you know, she's a legend in costume design. I think she's the only... Is she the only Black woman to have more than one Oscar? Which is insane. I think...
It's possible.
I think Frankenstein, I was a little bullish on it because I was just like, oh, blah, blah, blah. I don't like the movie. It's an understatement. But in a lot of these craft categories, whether the movie is quote unquote good or not doesn't really matter. They worry about the craft. And I spoke to Kate Holly. The work on that is insane. So I think she's going to easily win this. And yeah. Good for her.
All right. I think we all agree with you. Anybody want to add anything?
And I just genuinely want to know why Avatar was nominated.
There is a video online like the day that, because I found it because I was so mad. I was so mad when it got nominated. I could name you 6 other movies off the top of my head that could win in that place. I'm sorry. I know people don't like Wicked. Wicked would have been fine in there.
Well, Wicked would have been great.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think they responded to, like, there's a lot of, like, 3D printing of outfits. There was, I saw a video that was released that detailed how they made the costumes, because I was, like, in my rage that morning. And I was like, what do you mean? And I was, like, throwing stuff. What is it? And I found a video that explained it. It's interesting, but... like feather headdresses, that's really kind of cool and interesting, but like
that's sorry, great. Deborah Scott. Yeah, I mean, that's great. Thank you for explaining it, but I just don't, it, nothing in that film makes me think that warranted a nomination over any of the others, or at least last year, where, you know, the last one, which didn't get nominated for costumes. I don't know if the first one did. I guess it did because I got 10.
No, it didn't. No, it always got production design and like visual effects.
So why this year? Why this one? Well, what is so special about this as opposed to the other? When you've got Hedda right there, gorgeous costumes that actually infer detail about the characters. What? Whatever.
Feathers. Or heck, or one battle after another. I mean, if not the most flashy costumes, but you remember the
bathrobe.
You remember that bathrobe. You remember
it's a bathrobe. Weird outfit. Come on.
But that's important. Yeah, that's important character details. I think about it that. Look, Oppenheimer didn't. I think Oppenheimer won.
Yep.
And
it just seemed like he borrowed Jeff Bridges' bathrobe. Yeah, I
can get that robe out of my closet.
The wine soaked looking burgundy dress that Jesse Buckley wore was far more interesting than anything in a number of these movies, to be honest. So, I don't know this if do people still want to work with James Cameron since he's not going to make anything else until he dies, but Avatar films.
He's going to make stuff in the afterlife. He'll make something different in his
Avatar afterlife.
Oh God!
All right, I'm gonna move us forward.
Okay, yeah.
Fucking blue people,
David. Makeup. Since you have neither, why don't you take us through makeup and hair?
I am making a note. All right. So best makeup and hair. Frankenstein, Sinners, Kokuno, or I'm sorry, Kokuno. I cannot. Yes, the guy with bad Kokuo. Eyes.
Kokuo.
Thank you. The Smashing Machine, because there are scars, and the Ugly Stepsister.
Emotional scars.
Yeah, you know what? I think I said this before, but you know, the Sydney Sweeney boxing movie had way better makeup when it came to battle combat stuff than Smashing Machine. But anyway, whatever.
You guys want a fun stat here?
Yeah, I do.
Sure.
So I think we all have Frankenstein winning costume, makeup, and production design. Is that right?
Not mostly. Everyone, but yeah.
No. Mostly.
Not everyone. Oh, yeah, right. Okay, sorry. Well, for those of us who do, if it wins all three of those, it will be only the fifth film ever to do so, along with Amadeus, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, Mad Max, Fury Road, and Poor Things. So kind of a neat, rare... You would think those three categories kind of play together more, but not
based on
so
how
much.
Good those movies are, that makes me convinced that it's not going to sweep.
Right? Those are like great movies.
Yeah, I'm like, really?
But it did sweep the season in all three of those categories. Like, it won everything. Yeah. So it's hard to see it not taking those three.
I want one last ditch effort for Kokuho to get something. Because I thought, I don't know, traditional, gorgeous, whatever.
Yeah. If they actually watch it,
that's true.
Then, yeah, it's possible.
So we all have David Frankenstein except...
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah, David has Sinners. David, are you still going to the Sinners?
Yeah, you know, I maybe I got caught up in the BAFTA between the BAFTA mess and the SAGs or whatever, but I just wonder if people can say to themselves, I voted for Frankenstein over Sinners in any category, you know, and I don't even hate Frankenstein. It's just not nearly as good. And, you know, it feels like if that's the place where you want to give an award, you know, that would be the place you'd throw Frankenstein. But I think what Mark said, and I think this is borne out somewhat in a lot of these ballots that we've seen that are, you know, been shown, but not, we have no names attached to them, right? Is that Sinners is number two in a lot of categories. And I think that swell may matter more than we think.
Yeah.
I think Mark might be underselling when he says it's going to win four. And I understand. Yeah. I also think you're absolutely right.
No, I think it wins five or six, and I just don't know which other two where I have it number two to move it. But this is a good spot as well as any of the other Frankenstein wins, because Sinners, the makeup in Sinners with his clawed face and the vamp, you know, Jack, what's his name? Jack O'Connell. Sorry, it's drew a blank.
Yeah.
It is, it's awesome. So, yeah, I could see a win.
You know, and when people compare, which is the laziest fucking comparison of all time, when people say it's just like From Dusk Till Dawn, you know, if you watch the end of From Dusk Till Dawn, those ridiculous looking vampires, I mean, forget all the other dumb shit that you can rebut about that comparison, but the makeup, you know, compared, and the vampire makeup compared to that, is just like leagues and leagues above that. So anyway, that movie's junk. So whatever.
I'd say I just if Sinners does win someplace else, I don't think it's going to be in makeup. I think Jacob Elordi as the monster, him getting that nomination, and so much of that playing into him having the makeup, I can't see him lose. That see it losing here.
It's hard to predict, but yeah. What'd you say, Megan? Sorry.
No, I was just saying that's an interesting point, Ben.
Oh yeah, thank you,
Ben. Yep. Take us through animated feature.
Okay. Nominees are K-pop Demon Hunters and four other films. There's Zootopia 2, Little Amelie, or the character of the rain, Arco and Elio, Elio. I don't know why I thought I was mispronouncing that.
Is it Elio? Okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
K-pop. I've been saying it wrong all year.
Yeah. K-pop swept between everything Putin and all Elio. Year. Yeah, it's K-pop. Yeah. I mean, I remember one website was like waiting. Okay, you know, if it's not going to win, we just got to need Zootopia 2 to come out. And I guess maybe that's the number two, but it's a far distant number two. So, and I mean, unlike last year, I mean, you know, we had Wild Robot and Flow. There's no indie movie that's emerging as a potential spoiler. I mean, that would be Little Amelie or Arco, but neither one of them has the passion. So, yeah. It's K-pop Demon Hunters, and it's a fine one.
All right. Anybody have anything else to add? Nope. K-pop, one of the safest awards of the night, I think.
Yeah.
Cinematography. Jalal, you want to take us through cinematography?
With pleasure. and the nominees are... There we go. Then Frankenstein. Marty Supreme, One Bell After Another, Sinners, Train Dreams. Clarence, you were not joking. It's really hard to do that in alphabetical order.
It's that G through N range that's really like, whoa, which one's first?
And I think we're pretty, I don't know the exact numbers, but I think we're pretty split between Sinners and One Bell After Another. I'm going with One Battle After Another because I thought the cinematography was undeniable from that film, no matter what you think about that film. But then Sinners started to win a bunch of the critics' prizes and it became the front runner. But then One Battle After Another started winning the industry awards. So I think it could be either one. And Sinners has history on its side, hopefully becoming the first woman to win the cinematography Oscar, but after Power of the Dog, they've proven they don't give a fuck about that. So I don't know, someone else take it away with what they think.
I have Train Dreams because I think there's a lot of love for that film. And I think that I know that a lot of people don't think it won a Critics' Choice. It's one of some other places. And I know Critics' Choice, you know, we don't necessarily put the highest of, I mean, well, I do, but I know that's not.
We should.
Yes.
We should. I think, they have good track record.
Yeah, I think that this could be a surprise. That's what I'm kind of anticipating is that because there is love for that film. And the one thing everybody walks away from with that film is how beautiful it looks and the way it's shot.
I really feel like Netflix really could have. This is going to sound like a joke, but I mean it. They could really say, or had a campaign that was like sick of voting for Sinners or One Battle After Another, two indecisive, vote for Train Dreams and cinematography. You know, it's the most beautiful movie you've ever seen all year.
You know, and I also think that Train Dreams, one area that I think it's hard to deny is that it certainly did the most with its cinematography with the least, because it just doesn't have anywhere near as much money behind it as these other films. And it's a gorgeous, gorgeous looking movie.
That's my personal pick. And I do think this is one of the tougher races because the easier races, we know there's like a no-brainer front runner, like we just did with the animated feature. Most races come down to one or two films where you're like, oh, I'm on the fence. This is one where, like, literally I would not be surprised with any of those top three winning. I ultimately, for the same reason I think Jalal did, I went with One Battle After Another because Train Dreams missed the BSC, the British Cinematographer Society, and One Battle won that, and ACS.
Just won that reviews. One too.
And BAFTA, like it won everything major, so it just became hard. And then it's also the Oscar frontrunner. But again, you got, like mentioned, history could be made with Sinners. Train Dreams is the most beautifully shot film of the year, and One Battle is extremely well shot too. Like, you can't fault any of them. It's great. I love to see that.
I think Megan's onto something. I do. And I think the whole Sinners, One Battle, and another film coming in could happen in a couple of other categories.
Yep. I agree with that.
It'd be fun.
All right. Editing. Anybody want to take us through editing? Megan, you haven't done anything in a while.
Sure. We have One Battle After Another, Sinners, Marty Supreme, F1, Sentimental Value. I think
you flew through that.
Oh, I'm changing mine.
Ooh.
after another, I think. Oh. Yeah. Sorry. Yes. So it looks like we're split between Sinners and One Battle After Another.
So if there is a split here, what wins?
Should be Sentimental Value personally, but I have no clue. Besides,
I don't think that would it be F1? Because I don't think Marty Supreme is winning anything.
Yeah, I think it's F1 because I think a lot of us think F1 is winning sound. And while it hasn't tied up too much in the last 5 years, once sound, the Academy went from two categories to one in that for sound, the overlap isn't as clear as it used to be, but those two categories seem to go together a lot. So I think F1 would be the benefactor if it did split a little bit.
F1 is also an interesting movie because it hits two sweet spots with two different types of voters. It hits the steak eaters, and it also hits the the steak eater right there, Mark.
That's me.
He's literally eating steak right now.
The international voters.
F1, no, well, I was thinking double cheeseburger, but we'll go with steak.
Oh, I don't do cheese.
I thought it was
steak was correct.
Like bad cliches.
Oh.
What, Matt?
F1, bad cliches. I thought that was the people who like bad cliches are the ones
but
who
it's
go for
so
F1.
Fun. Come on.
As you, Mark, I will give you that last car race scene is really, really well done. But most of the rest of it. Anyway, since we're speaking about cars, though, this is like the area where I have become very, very frustrated with maybe this category and perhaps even this movie to some degree, is that in a world where we have seen the movies Bullet and The French Connection, maybe I've just seen Bullet because I'm old, and To Live and Die in L.A., can somebody please explain to me what is so exciting about that fucking car chase scene in One Battle After Another? They just drive straight over the road for a long fucking time.
I love that.
I loved it, too.
Suspenseful.
Yeah. I thought it was great.
I really love it. The tension it's pushing with it. Just even the whole setup beforehand when DiCaprio gets to the compound and the shooting and the way they're just moving around from there.
I could have gone outside my house and gotten my car and just found a bumpy road and I could have gotten the wee feeling, you know, when you go over the high part. You know?
To the contrast, I mean, the fact that it is so simple, that it is just this car moving is what really, I mean, I've of course obviously been making fun of F1 and it's like, I don't care what these cars are doing. They're moving around, whatever. But here,
if you don't care what the car is doing, why is the editing good?
Because I like the way.
Well, I don't think it's just that.
It's not about the car.
Wait. Okay.
Let's go.
Frank, what were you saying?
Because it's not about the car. The editing in this film is not about the car. When you talk about Bullet and French Connection, you're talking about films that are about the chase sequence. This film wasn't about the chase sequence as far as
you're absolutely right. It is very long and very straight and very boring. And someday someone will explain to me what this movie's about in general. But anyway, I'll abstain from the rest of this conversation because I'll get the
Witch okay. Hunt. Let's go.
All right. Lots of passion on editing. Jalal, why don't you take us through casting?
Gladly.
Ooh.
The nominees for the first ever casting director award are Hamnet, Marty Supreme, One Battle After Another, The Secret Agent, and Sinners. And the first casting award will go to Francine Meisler for Sinners. There's no debate. She will win. I would love to see the numbers. I was looking at this last night and just how undeniable she is within this industry. I don't know. I'm curious if anyone can beat her having to be someone in the top of their department. And she has helmed. She's been this casting director on 19 Best Picture nominees. And including two winners. 12 Years a Slave and
I mean, she did As Good as It Gets, Babel, Milk, The Tree of Life, Moneyball, 12 Years a Slave, Captain Phillips, Birdman, The Big Short, The Revenant, Arrival,
Captain Phillips,
Vice, That's Marriage incredible. Story, Little Women, The Trial of the Chicago 7, Dune 1 and 2, Don't Look Up, and Sinners, on top of a million other wow. movies.
Ella McKay.
Ella McKay. the first season of Succession. I just think she is
wow.
given a lot of Oscar wow. voters their careers.
That's,
without her, they don't have careers. They don't have ballots.
That's incredible.
And Sinners, the best cast of film of the year. It's the best cast film of the past 5 years. She created this phenomenal world where every actor is at the top of their game. And she's cast people in ways that you wouldn't think to cast them normally, like Hailee Steinfeld. Wunmi Misaka has become this overnight sensation. I mean, we've always known she's great. We all love very, we've talked about various things she's done.
Discovering Miles Caton.
Miles Caton. And it's just a phenomenal first win for this
category. She picked Miles Caton, even though he didn't know how to play guitar before he took this on. He learned just enough mm-hmm. chords for his audition, and then they walked into the they brought him in to read, and they asked him to play something else, and he couldn't do it. And they were like, "Oh, we like him anyway." So we're in, and he learned. He just because I guess some people can do things like that.
Now I do want to ask Ben, you're still going with One Battle? Is it because of the ensemble?
It is, and this is a fresh award. We have no data to go with this. So for right now, I'm going with the movie I consider the front runner for Best Picture. Also, the other added thing I will throw in is the non-actors that this movie did put into it that got quite acclaimed for what they brought to it as well. So that's pretty much just my logic for One Battle right now.
It is pretty... I would vote for Sinners, and I predicted Sinners, but I do think that One Battle casting is pretty extraordinary when you think of like just all the smaller roles, the mm-hmm. military, the non-Sean Penn military guys, the Christmas travelers,
Adventurers,
whatever the hell. Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot, and then the discovery of like Chase Infinity. It's certainly. These two are just going head to head in a lot of categories. I have a kind of different theory with how I think, you know, again, we have no data. You guys know how at the Golden Globes, they have that box office achievement award. That's kind of like the runner up film gets that. It seems like I wouldn't be surprised if casting is kind of like seen a little bit as a secondary picture award in that way. And, you know, again, I have nothing to back that on, but I wouldn't be surprised if there becomes a trend where that's like the runner up spot.
That's interesting too. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. I mean, what's also interesting about what you just said, Mark, is that we do have some data. I mean, it's not like BAFTA as a casting award. Somewhat. There's the Artios Awards, which is it's not a union or guild. It's its own separate weird thing. But and then Critics' Choice kind of has their own award. And what I find so fascinating about those is each of them have their own approach to how they judge casting. They all have various different winners. BAFTA really prefers musical things and discoveries and very character-y things, sometimes like Joker. The RDS likes to give awards to Jay Kelly. So think of that what you will.
So here's another interesting thing we have to always remember with these categories, and I know you guys know this, but I'm going to say it for our listeners. The nominees are decided by the branch, right? So I think they did a great job with five very eclectic films and casting decisions. But the winner is going to be chosen by everybody, right? So that's where I wonder if the casting directors understand their craft. And then I wonder if at the bigger picture stage, will it become more about ensemble and start to match SAG a lot at the winner stage? You know, we don't know a lot, but it's going to be very interesting, I think, over the next 5 years to see how this award kind of shapes. It's exciting, right? It's our first new category since I think 2000, right? Was animated.
Wow.
So it's been a while since we had something fun, shiny, and new.
And we're getting another new one next year, right?
Right. Then we only have to wait 2 years.
Yeah.
Not next year, but the
year following.
The 100th, I think. Yeah.
Is that Stunt?
Okay. Stunt. Yeah.
Yeah, Stunt.
Okay. Finally. Like, that should have been a while ago.
Yeah. Honestly. All right. Adapted screenplay. I'll read through this because I think we all have the same winner. And given recent guilds, I don't think it's pretty much up for debate. But the nominees are Begonia Hamnet. Excuse me, Begonia Frankenstein. I'm really terrible at this. One Battle After Another and Train Dreams. And we all have One Battle After Another. He's kind of won screenplay awards across the season. So
I think both screenplays are two of the easiest picks of the night. And I think if the Academy was smart, they may put those both early and kind of set up the whole Sinners One Battle. Like, you know, battle. Let them each get a win. Yeah, right. One battle. Yeah, no kidding. But that, I think these two are very, very easy calls.
Do you want to take us through original? Because you just spoiled
it. Sure, now that I spoiled it. Sorry. But they kind of go hand in hand, and I knew it was coming up next.
Sure.
I thought it would be all right. Sorry. Original screenplay nominees are, oh God, there's all sorts of weird letters. Blue Moon, It Was Just an Accident, Marty Supreme, Sentimental Value, Sinners. Boy, both categories I got, it was in alphabetical order, bottom to top. So I got lucky. We all have Sinners, just like we all have One Battle. So the sentiment is echoed, it seems.
Yep. No room for debate there, right? Anything, any additional commentary? Blue Moon. No.
Never know.
Okay. For my money, supporting actress is the most difficult race to call of the entire 24 categories. Who hasn't done one in a while? Who wants to take a student?
You need to Frank. You should do it. It's your category.
Me? No. Frank, yeah. You go.
Okay, Frank.
That first name we heard, and I know both Joey and I were really pleased. Elle Fanning in Sentimental Value. Inga Ibsdotter Lilius, Sentimental Value. Wumni Masaku, sorry, Sinners. Amy Madigan, Weapons, and Tiana Taylor, One Battle After Another. And oh my God. Like, is there a category where everybody deserves the award? I think it's this one.
I would say that Elle Fanning is probably the person you can say doesn't have a chance.
Oh, I'm not so sure about that.
Really?
That's interesting. I think she gets the Marissa Tomei.
Could be. I liked her in the movie. I thought her last scene was great, but I really don't think that her performance was up to the other four here.
Oh, she's my second choice. I loved her. I cheered when that was the first thing of the day, too. So.
Any woman who wins this category, I think I would be very, very happy. I think this is like a super stacked supporting actress category this year. I would die if there was a huge upset and one of the Sentimental Value women took it. I think both of them are so wonderful in the movie. I would love it if Wunmi Misaku won. I mean, she has BAFTA. This is a category that, like, it kind of doesn't, there's a, whoever does win, it like kind of doesn't make sense on paper in a way, because someone is always missing something. Like, Madigan doesn't have BAFTA
or Kiana a best Taylor's, picture nomination
or a best picture nomination
or any other nomination other than
this. I mean, Tiana Taylor has Golden Globe, Wunmi Misaku has BAFTA, like I just said. So I kind of want them to do this category first, get it out of the way. But I don't even know who I want to win. I'm going all over the place.
When it comes to like vote splitting, you know, this is a case where we could actually have that. I think Inga gives the best performance in this category for me. But do we think that there's a possibility that there's two from the same film here, and there is such strong feelings for the other folks too? It's not like. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I could see it this way. I could see Sean Penn winning, even though he's getting a category of Benicio del Toro. but I don't know that I could see Inga or Elle winning this category with another person from their film in it.
Yeah, and they're up against the fact that they haven't won anything, right? So they are, to me, like cinematography, this is a three-horse race between Masaku, Taylor, and Madigan. And you have Teyana Taylor, who I think this is one of those situations, too, where I would probably go with which, if I'm going to go one of those two, I'm probably going to go with whatever one I think is winning picture. Teyana Taylor, I think, is a pretty safe bet. She's the only one of the five that showed up at CCA, BAFTA, Critics' Choice, BAFTA, SAG, and Globes. She's the only one to hit the quartet. You had Woon Mi won BAFTA. You had Madigan win SAG and CCA. So it's very spread out. And like somebody mentioned, it's for Weapons, it's the only nomination. She'd be the first supporting actress winner without any other nominations since Penelope Cruz in Vicky Cristina Barcelona, which was 2008. So there's a lot of like pros and cons for all three of those folks to win. But I think at the end of the day, SAG and the timing of SAG is kind of where I'm leaning with Madigan, and the fact that she's a veteran, she's been around a while. She played the most memorable character, I think, maybe this of any film this year. So,
I think the veteran thing doesn't work necessarily for her because okay. Lauren Bacall lost. We had mentioned the females in supporting actor don't win, the veterans. The males do. Donna Michi won all those years ago. But what does work for Amy Madigan is she is really beloved in the industry.
Yeah.
People she gave love a really her. Good speech. I think I wasn't convinced until she, like, I actually think it's going to be Teyana Taylor, but I'm going with Amy
so
Madigan.
Do I.
Because, so do I. Yeah, because I think Amy Madigan is, she's just the one I've been banging the drum for. But I think that her speech, if she does win, I think it's the thing that would clinch it was her SAG speech because it was so good. She was so adorable running up to the stage like the kids. You forget that like she's 75 years old. Like she just looked so cool and youthful and like what a it's a great story. It's a great story. Hmm. And I think that's part of it too, that it's not necessarily like, oh, we're giving it to you because you're overdue or because you're a legendary actress or anything. It's because like it's a great story from this year. It was a big box office hit. It was a surprise. It's original storytelling. There's a lot that kind of goes with that, too.
I also think there's the factor of a lot of people probably had to be told that was Amy Madigan in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. 100%.
Don't forget the... Oh, sorry, Joey.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just saying the marketing was so interesting for Weapons. Because if someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was not advertised she was in the movie until opening weekend.
Not really, no.
It wasn't even advertised till after, I think.
I had to rush to the theaters to not get it spoiled for me opening weekend because everyone was talking about the big thing at the end with her 10 minutes of screen time, which is a pretty, I think, unique thing, both for someone of her demographic, like an older woman in Hollywood, and just in general for this type of thing. But like, I struggle with her so much. I'm predicting her now, but like, every argument you have for an Amy Madigan win was 10 times stronger last year for Demi Moore. And
right. Yeah, 100%.
So I'm like, why would they go for Amy Madigan when they didn't go for Demi Moore? But then I look at this category and
no makeup.
No Joel, makeup.
Is it possible that people like Amy Madigan more than they do Demi Moore?
I was wondering about that too. You.
Well, I mean, I don't want to be cruel here and catty. I'm just saying that's my impression.
I don't think she's I think people like Demi Moore. I think
so too.
I think they do too. But I'm with you on that, David, because I do wonder. There was more in that role connected to her, connected to way. The talking about Hollywood and body image and stuff. I do wonder if some men were did not like that film. And I do wonder if that kind of hurt it too.
I also thought of that film to get down to railing us now, but I also thought Margaret Qualley was kind of a lead too. So it felt very, I'm not sure who had more screen time. I think it might've been part of it.
Let me just say, Ben, go ahead.
Yeah.
Ben.
I was going to say, I think it's kind of that that's not really equivalent just because Demi Moore was up against Mikey Madsen in Anora, and Amy Madigan does not have a particular, you know, it's determined other person to win. And again, you know, while she's, you know, they say the legend thing, it was kind of a comeback in many ways. I mean, a lot of people can't even remember the last movie they saw her in, and she excited people. And it's not like just older voters who like her. It's younger people discovering her in a weird way too.
And like you said, Demi Moore, Ben?
No, I'm talking about Amy Madigan. No,
oh, my fault. I was thinking of Demi Moore. No way I can tell you what they've seen her in since. But yeah, okay, never mind.
Yeah, but I mean, Amy, this was a natural occurrence. I mean, early on in the year, it seemed like, oh, she's just going to sweep from the critics' things. And then we had, you know, the Golden Globes and then the BAFTA. But then she came right back with the Screen Actor Guild Award. And I've always felt like this was her category all year. And I think she doesn't have it locked, definitely, but I think there's just a lot of good things combining. And let's also remember, in the supporting category, they love their villains. they do enjoy a good villain win in this category.
Also, I know the argument has been made that, like, oh, they don't like to go full horror or whatever, but they've been, like I said, they've been edging us for a while. So maybe now they're really ready to, like, okay, here's us dipping our toes into that. Here's Amy Madigan. Here's her Oscar.
But also for the Demi Moore, Amy Madigan comparison, it's Demi Moore in a way, quite literally, she was very exposed. It was all about breaking that character down, like quite literally naked on screen.
Yeah.
But I think the comparison kind of loses a bit of tension when you think about Amy you could not swing a dick this Halloween without seeing some faggot dressed up as Aunt Gladys. Like, they are so like she said, I think at Critics' Choice, like, they love Gladys. I think they're more comfortable voting for that quote-unquote type of horror performance because it is kind of so over the top, even though it doesn't have a makeup nomination. It feels so character-y.
I mean, Joey, the year before, we couldn't go anywhere in WeHo without any faggot or Megan wearing a yellow coat, so...
I've been wearing a yellow coat for a long time before Demi Moore.
That's very true.
How dare you?
No, I would have been more convinced if I saw Minnie and Faggot with prosthetics on. But
I just want to say, Joey's going on about swinging dicks, and Megan mentioned edging, and I don't know what I'm doing here anymore.
Everyone pull their dicks out.
Well, the thing you have to figure out is, I think Rumi Masaku is coming in much stronger than anybody thought that she would. So who does she, if it was a two person race, it would probably be Teyana Taylor, but who is Rumi Masaku pulling votes from?
That's women from sentimental value.
I don't think that argument holds full. I mean, I get what you're saying, Clarence, but like in the end, the two industry votes went to Rumi and Amy. So is it maybe Tiana's pulling votes from someone?
Ooh. Sure. Right.
My guess is there's going to be a contingent that votes down the line for one battle and a contingent that votes down the line for Sinners.
Yeah.
But I think this is a category where a good percentage of both of that wants Madigan. And I don't have anything to base that on, but that's just kind of my theory, I think, with this. So I don't know that they're pulling votes. I think it's Madigan's pulling votes from both of them, if that makes sense.
Fair. All right. Let's go to supporting actor. Who wants to take us through supporting actor?
I'll do it.
But David raised his hand first.
Go ahead, David.
Megan, you get the next one.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm not doing alphabetical order because I'll fail. So there's Sean Penn in One Battle After Another, and also whatever movie he was acting in that no one else was acting in that film.
Got the commentary.
Stellan Skarsgård, Sentimental Value. Delroy Lindo Sinners, Benicio del Toro for his 7 minutes in One Battle After Another, and Jacob Elordi in.
That's great.
Am I the only Stellan? Really? Wow. Okay, sorry.
Well, I mean, if he couldn't win at BAFTA.
Yeah. And if he right. won BAFTA and Screen Actors Guild, I don't see how he loses, to be honest.
Three Academy Awards for Sean Penn? Really?
Sure.
Now, so listen, I don't think so.
I said the same thing. So, Frank, I don't know how old you are, but I know I grew up watching the Oscars at a time where very few people were able to get two wins, let alone three. But now I think this is a new Academy that does not think about it that way. And I learned that lesson the hard way when McDormand won her third. And I was like, there's no way they're going to give it to McDormand. She already has two. That's rare enough. So she won, and I think the lesson I'm taking from that is you can't really think about it that way. You just have to look at it as an individual year.
And you're looking at it similar to the way I'm looking at it, Mark, but a little differently in terms of what this category reminds me of is they gave it twice to Christoph Waltz in a very short amount of time. This is a very similar character jury villain role. And
Ali too.
Yeah. So sure, I just sure. like if he's going to win, if Sean Penn is going to win BAFTA and SAG, and it's a very similar role to what they like to reward, I think it's pretty, it's hard for me to imagine.
And it's the front runner to win picture, mm-hmm. and it's going to have to win an acting award in there somewhere if it's winning. Now, it may not win a picture, but if you have it winning picture, you probably have to take it in one of the four categories somewhere. And I think Penn is the best shot.
I think there's a couple interesting things going on here. And, you know, and I made fun of in the early going of, you know, announcing his name. And I love Sean Penn. I am a huge Sean Penn. I do not like this performance, but I do very much like Sean Penn. A lot of people don't. I mean, really, really don't. I mean, viscerally dislike Sean Penn to a point where I think that is actually more cartoonish than his performance. That's one thing, but we also have two actors in this category who weren't SAG nominated in Skarsgård and Lindo. And I think in particular, and I picked him, I'm going out on a very, very far limb, and I'm picking Lindo to win here. And I think it's interesting because this deck has been shuffled, mm-hmm. you know, going into this category. And I just wonder how many people can actually pull that final sort of, you know, lever on Sean Penn. I don't know.
Well, I was going to say my thing. I noticed that too early on with Benicio del Toro winning all those Critics' Choice Awards, despite having so little, or not Critics' Choice, just Critic Awards. And despite all that dislike, Penn ended up winning the two biggest awards that you need before going into the Oscars. And he hasn't done or said anything different in that time frame, so I'm guessing they're over it. Whoever is voting against him isn't that large enough of a group.
It's going to be it's a bigger field and it's a different field, though. That's I think that's where there's a little bit of a difference here. But you might be right, Ben. I mean, you know, I really thought that Penn looked like a front runner early on. He seemed to slide back, and then all of a sudden, it's like he's picked up real steam at the end here. Even though you can't find any, I mean, you know, if you that you should ever go on social media ever, but Jesus, the animus towards him. But it also exists. I mean, I happen to know somebody who actually knows him really well, and he knows he's not well liked. So it's
he doesn't care,
which is actually the coolest thing about him. It's the coolest thing. He doesn't give a shit. Yeah, I think it's great. Yeah.
Well, and David, what you said is, I think, why he's winning. Him sliding back, he did not do a single piece of campaigning, which meant there was no chance for him to remind people
to blow it.
A brand right.
Yeah. It's the anti Chalamet.
Okay. Pause on that. You know, we're going to talk about that in a minute.
Okay. One more thing for before we do, if you don't mind. So David, I think said Delroy. I have Delroy too. I do think he is a legit contender, and like you said, some of these wins weren't with him there to kind of be in the running, but that's probably also his biggest hurdle. He would be the first supporting actor winner since 1998 to win without winning at least one of SAG, BAFTA, Globes, or CCA, and he wasn't nominated even for any of those. So it's a very uphill climb, but if the momentum truly did swing and swing heavily after SAG while voters were voting, then I could see Lindo getting swept up if it's a night where Sinners wins a lot.
Can I say something sacrilegious? Don't want anyone to take it the wrong way because it pains me to say what I'm about to say, but Delroy Lindo is the might be the Jamie Lee Curtis of this year. I think Delroy Lindo, I would personally vote for Delroy Lindo. I think he's great, but what I mean by that is Delroy Lindo has become the face of the film. He gave the speech at SAG. He went through a very traumatic experience at BAFTA and handled it with class, and because of that was on every newspaper. And I think, and it's just kind of, he became, they wanted, and he's also the, yes, by far the oldest person in that film, has been around for decades, and I think they kind of all leaned on him. We saw him support Michael B. Jordan as he won the SAG award, kind of like how Jamie Lee Curtis ushered in, not ushered in, but became the face of Everything Everywhere, gave speeches everywhere, supported the cast as much as she could. So I think that could help him in the end.
It's interesting.
And I'm sorry for having to say that, because I know.
He's better than Jamie Lee Curtis, so don't worry about it.
Yeah. All right, Megan, actress.
Jesse Buckley, Hamnet. Rose Byrne, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. Renata Ryan's Sentimental Value. Kate Hudson, Song Sung Blue. Emma Stone, Begonia.
It's okay, Megan, because you could have just stopped after the first name.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good, right.
Jesse Buckley.
Yeah.
Performance.
Come get your Oscar.
But yeah.
Get
the interest, not that it, yeah. Leave your cat at home. Not that it matters, but the interesting thing, the litmus test here is, who do you think is this is the runner-up?
Rose
Kate
Byrne.
Hudson.
I agree.
I think Rose Byrne. But
no, yeah. Too many people hate that movie. Which one? Thank you.
I hate that movie, but she would be my number two.
Yeah, I didn't love the movie either. But I didn't hate it as much as Song Sung Blue. So.
But I think that's more of a crowd pleaser. That's more of a
You're right. I just don't want to hate with that crowd. That's all, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
I think it lost Kate Hudson,
she's the spoiler. She's the spoiler.
I would say with
I could see Kate Hudson. Sure.
Yeah.
But they do like their, you know, women going through pain. I mean, that's what Jesse Buckley's doing, and Rose Byrne's just going through it even more all the time.
I mean,
Kate Hudson loses a leg, right?
Yeah.
That's not the pain of that film. The pain of that film is having to act opposite Hugh Jackman.
Yeah. All right. We don't need to spend a lot of time on that because it's a pointless conversation. Jesse Buckley's going to win. I'll take us through actor. We've got, I'm going to get this right. We have Timothy Chalamet, Marty Supreme. We got Leo DiCaprio in Battle After Another. We've got Ethan Hawke, Blue Moon. We've got Michael B. Jordan, Sinners. And we've got Wagner Moura, Secret Agent.
You did it. That HJ.
I got it.
You nailed it.
Took me a bit. So we all have Michael B. Jordan following the surprise SAG win, except for you, Megan.
I do have that. That is what I think. Sorry.
Okay. All right. So we're all going with Michael B. Jordan.
Yes.
So we're.
Change the date, Megan. Change the date.
I'm changing the date.
I may not be going with Michael B. Jordan. I mentioned earlier documentary and. One other, This Is the Other. This is a category where I can see any of the five winning, to be honest. I think there's a narrative that you could make or a path you could make for any of them. And I'm really, really close to switching from Jordan to Leonardo DiCaprio.
That is so interesting. Well, see, I think
I
you're
the
right.
Only one on Gold Derby that has that
there's any path. I do think you're right, except for Ethan Hawke. I think Ethan Hawke's path has been wildly overdone, but I think anyone else could win.
Did Do you think if Timothy Chalamet wins, he gets up there and says, "I like ballet and I like opera," and then goes like this?
100% he does. That's that's for sure.
No, he doesn't care anymore after that. He got his Oscar.
Oh, he's gonna be.
Oh, he wants he wants two or three. He wants. Yeah. He's not going. He's not coming.
So exhausted already.
He's a legend, don't we all know? He's a legend. He'll tell you.
He's probably coming for Katharine Hepburn's. That's probably his goal.
Hey guys, did his comments come while they were still voting, or was it after? No,
like 2 hours before they closed.
No, and it's a very internet. Sorry, Mark, you say something?
Is it? Did it? No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was saying they came technically before voting because that aired on CNN way before it went viral. But they didn't go, that first tweet that made it go viral, no one, that people started talking about it or noticed it, wasn't until 2 hours before voting.
Okay.
But for the CNN voting.
So nobody saw it until voting ended. And nobody that saw it is probably voting for us.
But he wasn't. No,
it feels like an online thing.
He was insufferable before that, though, right?
He's definitely exactly. He was his whole campaign. No,
I think he's a great actor. Let me say, I think he's a great actor. But
me too. Me too.
Oh, I don't think he's a great actor, and I think he's insufferable. So I got a double there.
I just think next time he's up for something, he just needs to shut his mouth and let the work stand for itself.
He needs to learn from Sean Penn.
Yes.
But all the Sean
Penn don't come.
Yeah, like. Everybody's going to give it to Sean Penn because he doesn't want to be there. And I think Chalamet's kind of dug himself in a ditch even worse than Bradley Cooper.
And I think that Marty Supreme film, none of us have it winning anything, right? So I don't know in the end that they really like that or love that movie. They might like it because they did nominate it quite a few places. But it's not winning anything, so it's... You know, versus Leo, who's in the front runner, Michael B. Jordan, who's in the co-front runner. You know, that's and one SAG, so it's hard. And I think the biggest what makes this category for me so hard is not just that there's any of the five can win; it's that BAFTA fucked us. Sorry, BAFTA screwed us because I don't know what the hell to do with that. That's a very important precursor, probably top two at least, and it goes to. I can't see his name right, probably Arameo or something like that, right? And so not one of the contenders this year. So that leaves us with a pretty glaring hole and direction on what to do. Well, what if, you know, who was the runner up? Was it Leo? Was it Timothy?
You're saying BAFTA fucked us, but I wonder if the way that they shafted Michael himself with their mishandling, complete and total mishandling of that moment, which ended up causing harm to everybody attached. I do think there could be some sentiment there. And I think Jordan's great in the movie, by the way. If he won, I'll be clapping, but
me too.
You know, I really do wonder if there's a little bit of like, God, Jesus, you know, can a couple black guys get a break at an award show?
Well, he got it at the screen, at the actors, when, I mean, the enthusiasm. Yeah, but
they're still voting. They're still voting since that happened. And that may actually make my argument a little bit is that he was already moving in a good direction. And we have this ridiculous drama that, you know, BAFTA set up by not knowing where to put a microphone and or how to, you know, deliver a decent apology to people afterwards. You know, I don't think it's nothing.
Well, and I was going to say one other thing with BAFTA. One thing it showed me, at least, was Timmy was completely vulnerable. I mean, the fact that they went out of their way not to give it to him just said, okay, that means somebody else could get it. I mean, so, and I think the only reason, you know, actor is the only one that has, you know, crossover with the Academy, and they gave it to Michael B. Jordan, so we're all going with Michael B. Jordan because we got nothing else.
I think this should be a lesson also, because we're talking about, like, I mean, you're not the one guilty, like, it's not you specifically, Ben, but you mentioned that Timothy Chalamet was shafted, and I think the way we're framing this is that Timothy Chalamet is screwed over, when in really it's the awards prognosticators and the bloggers and everyone on Twitter, I think, made a mistake from the beginning and just decided it was Timothée Chalamet's year, sight unseen, without seeing the film.
Well,
yeah.
He did win.
Voters came in and said, No. And meanwhile, Marty Supreme, it's not a transformative performance. It's an incredibly unlikable character. He's very young. So I don't think we should have sat there and said it has to be Timothy from the very beginning. I think Critics' Choice made a mistake.
Well, the lot of critic awards did go to Timmy early on, so there was a reason to believe he was the front runner. He was the thing people were talking about in terms of a lead actor performance early on, and the Globe, and he did win the Globe as well. So it wasn't completely out of left field to think he was the
Right.
front runner for a while.
But were they trying
Yeah.
to create that narrative? So part of me thinks, yeah.
Oh, I'm certain they were, and again, I don't see much of the performance. I mean, he's playing annoying and there's not much depth there. So to me, I never got it, but I didn't like the film either. So, and I've
And he
yet to really
thought.
respond to him, but you know, doesn't stop the Oscar, you know, my opinion is not going to be the only one that people are listening to when it comes to awards. So,
Ben, do you call him Timmy because he acts like a child? I'm just curious.
oh no, sorry. That was just a
Call him
slip.
Timmy
I think
too.
it's a fair
Yeah,
reasoning.
don't
I think it's a fair
apologize. Don't
reasoning.
apologize.
No. I
I
usually do
mean,
call him
Timmy
Timothée Chalamet. I usually go the whole thing. So, but
Well, let's all remember that what Jalal told me a couple of weeks ago, because Marty Supreme is what, Jalal?
American Hustle for 2025, baby.
Is
Controversial
his
director
going
and
home
all.
empty-handed? Oh, okay. Yeah, true too.
And going home empty-handed, yeah.
And going home
Sorry.
empty-handed, yeah.
All
right. Moving forward to director, and I'll just run through these real quick. Paul Thomas Anderson, One Battle After Another, Ryan Coogler, Sinners, Josh Safdie, Marty Supreme, Joachim Trier, Sentimental Value, and Chloe Zhao, Hamnet. We've all got Paul Thomas Anderson. I don't know. I mean, Mark, maybe you can tell us what Clayton's thinking. I don't know what Clayton's thinking about Ryan Coogler. I mean, I would love it,
Listen,
but.
I can tell you actually, he would rather he doesn't he would rather be wrong at PTA win, and he went with Coogler, than be wrong going with PTA and Coogler wins. That's what he was saying, because he's been backing Coogler and stuff, so he'd rather just be wrong than be wrong the other way, if that makes sense. But yeah, PTA, this year has felt like the entire narrative of this year is PTA needs to finally win. And he does, and he's gonna win, and he's probably gonna win a few. But this year also feels kind of, it reminds me of 2006 when it was like Marty's year, 2007 when the Coen's year, Nolan in 2023, like the coronation of their careers. And that's what it feels like. It's time for PTA. And I think everybody knows that, on top of it being a front runner. And if there's one precursor I have never bet against and probably never will bet against, it's DGA. And they went with PTA. So this is one of the easier picks of the night, in my opinion.
Mark, do you think that if I don't think that if Anderson wins Best Director, it automatically means that One Battle
No.
is winning picture? Okay,
No,
no.
I definitely think if I definitely can see a split, but I don't. I think it, the craziest split is people picking Coogler in One Battle. That's just not going to happen. But I absolutely can see PTA winning, but Sinners winning picture, because the preferential ballot is a big X factor in that equation. So we'll see. That's one of the hardest ones, as well as picture, which we're about to talk about.
I just hope there isn't a split this year. I think, I mean, I know people have different opinions on this podcast, but I thought both films were brilliant. I'm personally rooting for Sinners, but
Same.
I don't,
Same.
and I'm predicting it's going to be One Battle After Another sweep in the top two. And I just don't want to see another year where the film directed by a black filmmaker wins the popular best picture vote, but then they decide the director isn't worthy enough for best director. It's happened multiple times in the past 10
Yeah.
years, and I don't want to see it again.
It's a really good point,
Fair
Jalal, although
enough.
I think you could say that Coogler will salve those wounds with the other two Oscars he's going to win on that night. But
I
yeah,
hope so.
I get your point. I get your point.
And I think it's also what we have to remember. I just kind of mentioned this, is it is two different voting systems. So outcomes like that are going to happen. And I know, I get why that would be a feeling people would have, but As hard as it is to, I would just chalk it up to coincidence and the fact that it's the preference ballot that gets in the way of that versus, every other category is ranked voting. So,
It just happens more often to the black filmmaker than the other filmmaker. It doesn't happen to Christopher Nolan. It doesn't happen to.
Fair.
I'm trying but to I think blanking in the past 10 years. But
John Baker.
It's the Steve Barry Jenkins rule, right, Joel? The Steve
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Here's the thing too that I want to make sure we keep in mind is it's all about what you're up against, right? So when 12 Years a Slave won and the film went to Gravity, right? That was a tight two horse race. They actually tied PGA, which also uses a preferential ballot, and the odds of that are like 0.0, 25,000 zeros won. Then you have the 2016 year. La La Land set the record for Oscar nomination. So it's not surprising that the favorite director was Chazelle when Moonlight won. And then what's the third one? This would be the third one. Again, one battle after another is a wildly popular film that won PGA, DGA, ACE, WGA. So I think in those years you have strict competition and anything can happen. In 2023, I still don't know what the runner-up was. You could say it was Poor Things. I would argue Holdovers or American Fiction are just as likely. And so I think you have in a year, a coronation year like this is, it just feels like it would sweep the way that Nolan did in Scorsese. So I get the argument, and it is odd and doesn't look good. But I think with all that in mind, with the preferential ballot, with the competition those directors were facing, those were tight races.
All right, let's close this out because this is running on 2 hours. Joey, take us through Best Picture, please.
2 hours is perfect, dude. That's
you don't great. Have to do alphabetical order.
Anyway. No, yes, you do. Stop it.
Begonia, F1, Frankenstein, Hamnet. Marty Supreme, it's five. One Battle After Another, Secret Agent, Sentimental Value, Sinners, Train Dreams.
Joey's so glad we didn't time that.
That was awesome, dude. That was well done.
That's only because I've been running through my Best Picture menu in my head over and over and over and over again. It's to me, it's One Battle After Another. I don't know. I didn't think that even if Sinners won SAG, that meant that it was going to be the new Best Picture frontrunner. I actually think that it winning in SAG, the SAG ensemble win, would help one of the actors individually, like maybe Michael B. Jordan, maybe Adele Ray Lindo. So I'm still sticking with One Battle After Another. I think everyone else is too, except Clarence, unless Clarence
and
is
David.
And David.
I was just say David better have Sinners after the predictions, yeah. Which were all good predictions, but that path is Sinners. So
I mean, I honestly think it wouldn't have made sense with my other arguments.
No,
I mean, I think honestly, it's what I will say about what happened at SAG is I think. It made us realize that maybe this is a closer race than we had thought previously. And I think that's even 100%. Down the stretch. You know, I think we've been seeing that. I really think that if I was doing the percentages, I think One Battle is more likely to win, but sometimes we have that, but I think it's close. And sometimes we have that feeling in our gut and I'm not ignoring mine this time, even though my gut is an idiot, but that's fine.
I love it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Clarence. What do you got?
No, I have a feeling. I have a feeling that the film that is more preferential ballot is about emotion, is about support, is about, passion. Vote. And I think, One Battle After Another has been designated the winner for so long that, but there's just like this growing groundswell of support. And I think the length of this season is yes. not playing in one battle after another's favor. I think people probably get tired of it or feel like they've already won. So let, you know, and maybe they're voting for Sinners. I'm just going with Sinners because I got nothing to lose. And if Sinners wins, then I can at least say I told you so.
Yeah.
I think that
I will love that.
I think there is a, it felt like the SAG win. It did feel like people would be excited to vote for it in Best Picture. Like, I know that, like, I'm exactly what I, it goes against just everything that I just said about not pushing it over to a win, but it feels like, even though I'm going with one battle after another, it does feel like there was like a, you know, an excitement for when that did win. So I don't know how much there is stock in that I saw a couple people online saying that, you know, traditionally people vote more at the beginning because they want to get their votes in early, but since now that they were making everyone watch all the movies, people are taking longer. I don't know how real that is or if that's a real thing, but I wonder if that would flip. Yeah, I don't know.
Does anyone think that Sinners is going to be more likely one or two in most of the ballots, whereas one battle after another could be like one or three or four for a lot of ballots, because it is a more esoteric film in some ways, and you know, and it really isn't. I mean, we talk about how popular it is. It's really not as popular as Sinners. It's not even close. But of course, this is with the voting group, not necessarily with, you know, people who go see movies. But it does strike me as a movie that could be a little off-putting in a way that Sinners maybe isn't. So for those who don't love it, it could fall a little bit further down in the preferential.
I hear you, David, but Sinners. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Megan.
Oh, I was just going to look at last year's winner, though, that I don't know anyone who likes Anora. Like, oh, really. I mean, I liked Anora okay. I just don't think it's a best picture. Right. I mean, but like,
correct.
I think we all thought, no, there's no way they're going to give it to Anora. And they did. That's
well,
my
Megan, argument. What was Anora's competition?
That's the problem. So listen, Conclave for sure. But that's my point too with what I was saying earlier. There are some years that are loaded. I think this is one of those. And there are some years like last year, which I would kill for one battle or Sinners to move to last year and be last year's winner. So we could have both.
Yeah,
these are both better than anything from last year.
Definitely, Mark. Going back to what David, you were saying, I think there are people who are going to rank it, but I don't think everyone is ranking Sinners top two. I think Sinners still has the
genre.
Yes. It's the genre. It's the entire movie.
I didn't mean everyone. I just think preponderance, you know? Yeah. I could
but
see
I think
it
there are snotty people.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the question I think to ask is, what's three? Cabinet, sentimental value? What's three and four? What are those other ones that are going to get a lot of votes but then be eliminated and have a lot of votes to hand over to whatever's two on their list and whatnot, right? So that's the hard part, is thinking in the mind of somebody who likes Hamnet number one, which one of those two do you prefer more? Somebody who has sentimental value number one, which of those two do you prefer more? And it's a kind of a pointless exercise because it's impossible to know, but it is fun to kind of theorize the type of person who likes this will like which of these two, because they are different films. One's political drama, one's a horror.
Well, they're both political dramas on some level, though. At least
social, sure.
you know, in the what you're saying,
social, like, yeah, social yeah. drama, yeah.
Because I like Hamnet better than everything, but it is much easier for me to slide to Sinners than One Battle After Another. And I should say something. I think Paul Thomas Anderson is an amazing filmmaker. I just didn't connect with this movie. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
That's it. You know.
But these directors don't always win for their best movie, right? We saw Scorsese win for and I love Departed, but it's probably his fifth or sixth best movie. I think the same thing about One Battle After Another. It's probably his fifth or sixth best movie, in my opinion. So that's
Oppenheimer. For Nolan.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. Oppenheimer's probably like my fourth or fifth. Yeah. So that's the thing too, is it just when the time just feels right. That just sounded bad. Sorry, I've had some wine. When the time feels right, they go with the one that they love, and that
seems to be. Why not timing? Timing is everything.
Timing is so much part of this. So much a part of this. Yeah.
I just want to throw one other thing. I mean, while the screen where the actor win or the actor thing did bring this excitement, and I did start wondering, I can't look over it winning PGA, especially when it's a movie that didn't make money. The Producers Guild still gave it their top prize. DGA, and we've talked about the international group, you know, the BAFTAs gave it to One Battle. And it's a film, while it's in America, it has a more, it's something other countries can see, and especially with the way our country is acting, they can see it and get something out of that and feel something in it. And I think, you know, these two movies have both been juggernauts in so many different ways, but I can't overlook some of the political feel of how One Battle feels like the perfect movie of this moment in this time.
That's true.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to pull through and win in the end.
And I agree. I think that's why it wins too. I'm just not, I just
love it. I hope you're right. And you shove it in all our faces. I really do. And you need to, because there's there's a lot of people that have said this is not a race. And that's where I think we are totally wrong. And there's no way to prove that unless Sinners wins. That's the frustrating thing. But I don't know how you can say it's not a race when one of them has ACE, SAG, and WGA.
Yeah,
and 16 nominations. 16 nominations.
And those who say that this is the most locked race, even more locked race than Oppenheimer, are full of shit.
No way.
And let me just put that out there.
Yeah. No way.
That's absolutely.
We wouldn't be talking about it this much if that was.
No.
Can
I throw in something that I don't think we've mentioned tonight, is that, you know, is this like the last great battle cry of the studio system? Warner Brothers having both films.
Love that.
You know, and then by this time next year, Warner could be called, who the fuck? No, Ellison Corporation or something. I don't know.
Para Brothers.
Yeah, Para Brothers.
Jesus. Warner Mount.
That I like. But I mean, it is really something to say that I think what's admirable at Warner Brothers has done is that I don't.
Oh, cliffhanger.
No. Suspense. What happened?
Yeah, David.
He doesn't what?
David.
What does he not do?
Like the Sopranos.
No. Just cut his camera. Just cut his camera.
Oh, wow. Okay.
All right. Well,
I guess we'll never know.
Yeah.
Because I really want to leave now and just leave on that note.
Right. I mean, we kind
of have to.
Okay.
We can't just sit here and go.
All right. So that is all of our predictions. And check back on the site on Friday, where we'll have our final updates after Mark locks his in and some of us change our minds again, like Joey.
What's your due date? What's your final day?
We are going to update on Friday. So all of our predictions need to be in Thursday night. So let's please do that.
Okay. I'll do my best.
Okay. So to our listeners, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Don't forget to rate us on YouTube or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Click like and subscribe on YouTube. I've already said that, but there we go again. And thank you, everyone. Happy Oscar week.
Happy Oscars.